monasteries also began to spread all over Europe. Now, these monasteries played initially a variety of different and complementary roles. For example, monks played a very important role in converting the people of the countryside. Long before there was a fully articulated parish system, there were monasteries in the countryside. Now, we think of monks as being people who ought to have been inside their monasteries staying there, cloistered, as we say. But in fact, in the early Middle Ages, not so many monks were very cloistered much of the time. They were oftentimes out working, and one of the things that they did is function as missionaries. Many, indeed, of the missionaries who worked in the countryside of early medieval Europe were, in fact, Irish or Anglo-Saxon monks who traveled very far from home to preach and to teach. Monasteries were often very important centers of learning. Many of these monasteries developed great and important schools where books were copied, learning was preserved, traditions of learning were preserved. Now, it's very important to say that this learning was maintained for the benefit of the church. Monks did not think of themselves as preserving classical culture because people in the 21st century might want to read all the great Roman authors. They were reading these authors very much in line with Augustine from his book on Christian learning, which we talked about in an earlier lecture. They were spoiling the Egyptians. They collected the classics in order to learn their Latin well so that they could read the Bible, so that they could preach the Bible to people, so that they could save people's souls. That was, in a sense, the point of their educational enterprise. Now, what this manifests to us, however, is a new cultural life spreading itself across Europe. We think, for instance, of the exuberant decorative motifs that are that entered art with the Celts and with the Anglo-Saxons. A wonderful sense of color, a wonderful sense of abstraction, and, of course, all of those incredibly intricate, beautiful, interlacing, knotted designs that are still to this day the glories of much faux Celtic art. You can go and buy, you know, imitations of Celtic art at virtually any store nowadays, but certainly many of these Celtic decorative motifs had a very long future in the history of Western art. Schools, generally located in monasteries, but sometimes in cathedrals, cathedral from the cathedra, the chair, the seat of a bishop, where the bishop articulates his authority. So schools sometimes in monasteries, sometimes in cathedrals. In other words, very much it was the case that learning was in the hands of the church. Now, what was that learning based on? Fundamentally, it was based on the Bible. And it was based on the church fathers as the great expositors, as the great interpreters, as the great teachers of the Bible. Now, I want to repeat, because it's a very important point, and it's one that we're going to meet again and again in some future lectures, that the purpose of education in this period was not to bring pleasure. It wasn't to form sort of liberally educated persons. It was indeed designed to save souls. It wasn't to help you get a job. You didn't go to school in the early Middle Ages because then you wanted to go out and get a good job. You went to school, if you went to school at all, and mostly schooling was confined to members of the clergy or perhaps members of the higher aristocracy. Schooling was for religious purposes. Now, the greatest centers initially of education were in the north of England. Lindisfarne, for example, a monastery that lays just off the coast of the north of England, had very strong Irish connections. It produced a spectacular gospel book, which can be viewed in the British Library to this day, the British Museum, I should say. Library and Museum used to be in the same place. And it is a masterpiece of biblical scholarship and of book art. The north of England also produced remarkable scholars. The greatest single figure of all was the Anglo-Saxon Bede. Bede lived from 673 to 735. In a lifetime at Wearmouth and Jarrow, he lived there from the time he was 5 years old in the monasteries in the north of England. He wrote a magnificent history, which is still a masterpiece of historical writing and an important source for historians. He wrote biblical commentaries. He wrote theology. He wrote books on time reckoning. It is very largely to Bede that we owe the fact that we date today Anno Domini, in the year of the Lord. So by about 750, we see another region with a group of peoples professing a universal faith, placing that faith at the center of their historical experience, looking to one holy book, thinking of themselves as a new chosen people, and entertaining complex relationships with the classical tradition. We see also in an interesting way the gradual shift of power from the Mediterranean to the north. We see also, as we end our consideration of these heirs of the Roman Empire, a volatile situation in the Mediterranean. But we see, above all, the evolution of antiquity into three different, distinct, yet kindred heirs of Rome.